Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
20 times I've tried to tell you, 20 times I've cried alone. Always I'm surprised how well you cut my feelings to the bone. Don't wanna leave you, really. Just wanna break the ice. Do I look silly to you when I yield to your advice? When you say we belong to the light, we belong to the thunder. We belong to the sound of the words we've both fallen under. Whatever we deny or embrace, for worse or for better, we belong, we belong, we belong together.
It is Loan and Navarro, a song they wrote together, and a song that, well, obviously that's them performing as well. But a song that was a huge hit for Pat Benatar, and I guess jump-started the songwriting careers of Loan and Navarro. Dan Navarro joins us tonight on Air America Radio. Hey there, Dan.
Hey, Nicole. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a balmy day out in California all day today.
Oh, good. Well, it's nice and cool here in South Florida for a change. But we're not here to talk about the weather. Dan, as I was explaining earlier in the show, is an old friend of mine. I've been privileged to play the music of Loan and Navarro on the radio for many, many years, and to count you and Eric Loan among my friends. And, well, it's sort of a bittersweet reason that we're talking today. There's a new album out. Has it been released yet?
They started taking orders yesterday, and I think it ships on Tuesday of next week.
Okay, and it's called Keep the Light Alive, Celebrating the Music of Loan and Navarro. And, in fact, we just heard you and Eric, your version of your song, We Belong. That was a huge hit for Pat Benatar, of course. But on this new record, it's recorded by the Bangles.
By the Bangles, my old friends the Bangles. Eric and I wrote with them in 87 and 88, and had a couple of songs on one album, and then yet another couple on the Greatest Hits record. Long-standing friendship with them. We were part of the inner circle in the family for a long time, and they decided they wanted to do that song and did a lovely version of it.
Yes, and we'll hear a little of it after. I wanted to start out with that song. First of all, it is one of my favorite Loan and Navarro songs. But also there's a just something there that we belong together. And although Dan, these days you are performing alone, there's something about the partnership that you and Eric Loan have shared for the last 22, 23, how many years have you been working together?
Depends on when you start the clock. Eric and I met in 1978 and started singing together. We were singing waiters in a restaurant in Hollywood. Opera show tunes. It was actually pretty contemporary stuff. And, you know, this was 1978, so I was, you know, doing Bruce Springsteen tunes and my own. People didn't want to hear my tunes because they were chewing. They want to hear something familiar when they chew. And I was doing that kind of stuff and the odd Neil Young song and some Elvis Costello and some Joe Jackson and just, you know, having a good old time, a good old
my kind of music, yep.
Absolutely. And Eric, I went on the road with Severin Brown, who is Jackson's brother, and we did 3 weeks on the road. Eric was hired to replace me. When I came back from my little tourlet, he jumped over me and became the manager. And I hated him on site. I'm about 5'8". We were sort of like our own version of Hall & Oates. He's 6'2", blonde, and you know, built like a V, and I'm built a little bit more like an 8, and shorter, and dark curly hair and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We didn't really care for each other. We were pretty opposite in temperament, opposite in personality. Eric's from the northeast of the country, and his father was a Baptist minister. I'm from the southwest of the U.S., and my father had been a boxing promoter. Eric's, I think, Mayflower derived, and I'm Latino. It couldn't be possibly more different. But over time, we discovered we had some similar taste in music, and we started singing together for the fun of it. We weren't really ready to put anything together at that point in time, and about 2 years passed before we decided that we would actually try partnering. We started working together right at the tail end of 1980 and had a band, and started writing together kind of out of necessity. We were sidemen in the band. We were going to get some training before we started our own thing, and the guy stopped writing. So we jumped in and started writing songs. We Belong actually came out of the ashes of that band. I'd been kicked out, and I wasn't doing music, and I was, you know, a little older than you might be to, you know, and I was 30, and figured, well, it's all over.
Yeah, you can't trust anyone older than 30.
That's what, you know, the sort of rumor is that you shouldn't really consider this if you're beyond the age of about 18.
Right.
Well, Eric and I got together to just write a song for the heck of it. Was no real agenda. It wasn't for the band. It wasn't for anything else. And we had had some serious issues in our own friendship. He invited me into the band and then was asked, because I was his friend, he was asked to fire me. Oh. So, you know, you shoot the messenger, and so I blamed him, and we didn't get along very well. And yet we end up writing this song about a couple of tortured people who are pulling in opposite directions, who come to the conclusion periodically throughout the song that they belong together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't write something like that and then think, this is going to be a smash.
Right.
All I knew was, wow, this is better than anything we've ever done. Let's just keep going. So we started writing together religiously. Every couple of days we'd get together and do what we could. The strange story of the song is that 1 year later, it was top five on the charts.
Yeah. I mean,
it would happen that quickly and that easily. The publisher who pulled it together looked at us and said, it'll never be this easy again, and it hasn't been.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that for a while. A band came up in the wake of We Belong. I was asked not to be a member. So, you know, more issues from the old band, and that led to its own issues. We managed to pound our way through that, and around 1987, after knowing each other 9 years, after being successful songwriters for about 4 years, Eric and I decided to start a duo for the love of it. We figured, well, we're not getting signed with these bands. This is not working. Let's fail on our own terms.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to be acoustic. We decided not to do some of the songs other artists had cut of ours because they weren't really right for us. We decided to stick to two-part vocal. And 2 years later made our first record that came out in 1990 on Chameleon Records.
Wow. Wow. Now, for people who don't know, all these years you've been playing, and again, I spent almost 15 years on the radio, playing music on the radio in Los Angeles, and that's when I first met you. And Loewen and Navarro, you were staples at a number of the stations I worked at. About 5 years ago, Eric Loewen, your partner, was diagnosed with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And he kept performing. He performed until just a few months ago, right?
He finally retired in June. I only say finally, not because I wanted it to happen. It was a nightmare that would occur. But it was, he lasted longer than anybody thought. He had been having issues for about a year before he got his diagnosis, and we knew something was wrong, but we didn't know what. He started searching on the internet after a few months and called me one day and says, "I think I have ALS. I've been looking at the National Institute of Neurological Disorders website," and he says, "I think I've got ALS." Well, my ex-wife's stepmother had ALS when we were dating, and she lived 5 months. I knew about the disease, and I knew very well what the future held in store, but none of us had any sort of idea of what the timetable was. We had just started a new record. And it was the first one we had put out in 6 years. We had been dealing with, you know, divorces and marriages and all kinds of real life things, you know, a relocation, a re-relocation, all this crazy stuff. And we had stalled putting out a new record. So we decided we were going to jump at this. And in the middle of it, he starts to realize something is horribly, horribly wrong. He got his health insurance in order, got a clean bill of health, and then said, "Well, I've been having issues walking." They did a series of tests. There is no test for ALS.
Really?
They eliminate everything else.
Oh, wow.
And at the end of the day, you're left with a guy saying, "Well, we've tried everything. Well, you must have ALS." And he phoned me on March 17th, 2004. We had been about 2 weeks into starting the record. And he goes, "Diagnosis confirmed. I have Lou Gehrig's." And at that point, we just didn't know what to expect. We knew we wanted to put this record out. My first question is, do you want to quit? Do you want to stop, spend time with your family, you know, we can stop right now. He goes, no, I want to finish.
And at the time, just so, Eric had been was engaged. He had twin girls, and he was engaged to a woman who had triplets. They were all the same day, the same age. They were just a few days apart,
they're
right?
Born 3 days apart in the same year. He has a crop of, they're now almost 16. They've got 5, 15, and 3/4-year-olds
unbelievable
at home. I think the auto bills, the prom bills, graduation, college, the place basically rages of hormones. It's pretty amazing. But they're wonderful children. They're teenagers
now.
Three. But we had no idea what to expect. We wanted to release the record in September. I had no way of knowing if he was going to be completely incapacitated by then.
Mm-hmm. Nor did he, right?
No, nobody knew. And his attitude, you know, so we would have conversations periodically. Well, when do you think we should stop? And he says, as long as I can do it today, then I'm pretty sure I can do it tomorrow. And that became the sort of mentality for everything. It's a little bit like that, the one of the lines from The Princess Bride where Wesley talks about the dread pirate Robert, you know, deciding to befriend him and saying, wonderful day, Wesley, most likely kill you tomorrow.
Right.
And we would say, well, that was a great show, might die tomorrow. And we just kept going and going and going. We did 250 shows and put 3 albums out between his diagnosis and when he finally retired in June.
Wow.
We would hit stages that I thought we couldn't get past. He was using the cane, then he was using the walker, then he had his own wheelchair, then we needed the powered wheelchair, and bringing that on, we would check in his luggage and literally carry him on and off of airplanes. It got to the point where his voice was compromised, but he managed, we put the keys down, we changed some tempos, and discovered in the willingness to do that some amazing new arrangements of our own songs, kind of like finding an old friend and realizing you have more in common than you thought. It really was remarkable what we were able to continue to do, because it was a tremendous lesson for me in what persistence is about, a tremendous lesson in really, you know, finding what matters to you and not letting it go for all the money in the world.
Right.
And our people never stopped showing up. We would continuously say, we will come back as often as you do. And we stopped saying that for about 6 months because we didn't know what was going to happen. And then, frankly, once it kept going, we started saying it again.
Wow. Dan Navarro is with us, one half of Loewen and Navarro. There is a new tribute album coming out this week called Keep the Music Alive, Keep the Light Alive, celebrating the music of Loewen and Navarro. We're going to come back and talk about how this record came together, who's all on it, and listen to a little more of it. Right now, what's playing is a band called The Refugees. This is Wendy Waldman, right?
Deborah Holland from Animal Logic and Chris Fullens.
Wow, wonderful. So we'll listen to a little bit of this. It's called Compass Point, and we'll come back with more from Dan Navarro. We'll be right back. My compass point is bending.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Wake up each day. The weight of the world spreading over your shoulders.
Well, if that voice sounds familiar, it should. It is Jackson Browne performing a Loewen and Navarro song, Weight of the World. It is one of the many wonderful songs covered on the new album, Keep the Light Alive, celebrating the music of Loewen and Navarro. That'll be in stores Tuesday. The website is keepthelightalive.org. And all the proceeds from this album will benefit the Eric Loewen Trust, ASLA, LA, and Augie's Quest, three good organizations all dealing with ALS in different ways. Dan Navarro is with us. Dan, so you weren't instrumental in putting this album together. It just sort of happened around you?
Well, it happened. I was aware of what was going on, but the main instigator was a woman named Janice D'Alessandro, who we've known for many years. She was a successful food product marketer and had her own company. But we knew her from back in the day. She was a cocktail waitress at one of the clubs we used to play at and had been friends of ours for a long, long time. She was so struck by this, and this is, I think, something that happens when you, when you're faced with this kind of dilemma, with a serious illness or some kind of major life crisis. What on earth can I do about this? And she approached me one day and said she wanted to do a benefit concert. And, of course, started throwing out names of people that we knew well enough that might contribute to it. And it seemed like the benefit concert idea really was not a great one. It's hard to get those kinds of schedules synchronized. And so she then came up with the idea of a recording, at which point I said, you know, I'm going to have to back away. I can't have my fingerprints on this. It's a little crass for me to have, you know, to be instrumentally involved in a tribute mm-hmm. to me. You
right.
know, it just seemed really wrong-headed. But I certainly did give them some pointers as to people they could talk to that we had had relationships with. Keb Moe is on the record, and his first tour and behind his first record was opening six shows for us in the Midwest. Oh,
and I love Keb Moe, and he's just
terrific.
A brilliant artist and one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, too.
We became fast friends.
Mm-hmm.
Eric and I were very, very close, are very close with Jackson's brother, Severin, who's on the record.
Right.
And consequently, I'd known Jackson casually for many, many, many years. And started thinking of who could do something that would make some sense. And then I sort of, and as it was, actually, Janice's closest friend is Kevin McCormick, who's the bass player with Jackson.
Sure.
So she approached Kevin and said, what do you think of this idea? And Kevin loved it, waited for the right time to talk to Jackson about it. Completely coincidentally, or not, Jackson's co-manager is Cree Clover Miller.
Sure.
Who is Joel Raphael's daughter. Joel is
right.
on the record. I've known
yeah.
Cree since she was 16. I've known Joel
wow.
for about 30 years. And so there was a real deep family aspect to all of this. It really wasn't a matter of who can we get that's hot. It's really people were approached if they felt that they had something to say about the feelings that were generated by this horrible disease. And we kind of kept our distance. We get little progress reports every so often and point them in the right direction to people that they might talk to. But other than that, we didn't have anything to do with its creation.
Right.
We also did put Janice in touch with Mike Gormley, who had been our manager for a dozen years, to help her with the business end of things and dealing with, you know, the logistics of the music business, which can be quite daunting and murky as can be. So
mm-hmm.
between Kevin and Mike and Janice, they pounded this thing into shape over about a 2.5-year period. And,
wow.
And here we are.
And today, Eric is... He's still, his mind is sharp, and he's still writing and he's still doing things with you. He's just not performing anymore.
Exactly. He's paralyzed from the shoulders down. He
yeah.
has some movement in his fingers. He operates an on-screen keyboard with a cursor control that's attached to his eyeglasses, and can speak and chew and swallow and move his head around, and can click this little clicker. His voice is definitely compromised. He sounds like he's a little out of breath all the time, and his breathing's been badly affected, and that's ultimately going to be, when his breathing finally goes, that's going to be the last straw. But he's determined and has always been determined to remain productive and to be glad to be alive. He gets out of bed every day. He could just
yeah.
as easily stay in bed and watch the world go by or watch TV, but he gets out of bed, he dresses, puts shoes on.
Yep.
You know, at one point he says, pretty cool shoes, huh? Look at the bottom of them. And I looked at them, and they'd never touched the ground.
Oh, boy.
He's quite glib about his own situation, a man of tremendous good humor.
Yep.
And a guy who looks on the bright side.
Great. Dan Navarro, it's great to talk to you. Please send my love to Eric. The album Keep the Light Alive, celebrating the music of Loan Navarro, will be out Tuesday. Website keepthelightalive.org. Thanks, Dan. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend. The Bangles will go out with their take on We Belong.